London the Kosh blog is delighted to announce the signing of this week's Koshcast on a 50-minute deal. Coming up, we've got Euro 2016 analysis as Italy's hopes of a semi-final place go Zaza Zoom, Robson Kanu and Vokes stoke delirium in the Welsh, and a profligate Portugal profit from poor Polish penalties. Elsewhere, there's Pep and Arteta rocking up at Manchester City to do the no-hair, great-hair double act, Ibrahimovic taking his goals and general bellendery to Manchester United, Crystal Palace acting like a rich git at a charity auction, Barcelona surprising the world by signing an actual centre-back, and Milan equally surprising the world by appointing a decent manager. All that, Moomoo of the Week, and more bluster than a Sarkozy presidential bid. Come in, join us, but leave your stuttering run-ups at the door. Hello and welcome to this week's brand new signing, Koshcast episode whatever.
47.
What's going on here?
No, Bernie's good. He's just zooming out.
Sorry, I thought Bernie had stopped recording.
No. I'll never do that to you.
That's very nice of you. So Bernie's here because he's dicking around with the controls. How are you?
I am great.
And Mohamed, you have broken your fast.
Not yet.
No. But there was a picture of you on Facebook with like 50 other people.
Oh yes, that was yesterday.
Yeah, they do that every night.
Yeah.
I thought that was the big one.
That was the big one. No,
it's tonight.
Still gotta wait for like another 7 hours.
We had one last night too. It was pretty big in terms of the amount of food, not the amount of people.
So you went to a restaurant last night.
We did. Is it a Chinese restaurant?
Yeah. Bashu Bishu.
Yeah. I think Chelsea are signing.
Yeah. For 50 million.
Can you tell us a little bit about this restaurant? Because it's very dear to your heart.
I think there's a lot of fat around my heart now, which is very dear to me.
I think we looked at the first dish that came up, and I was asking him, but he's like, this is an amazing dish. He's been there before. And I'm like, okay, well, what's the base of the sauce? And he couldn't tell me, and we kind of looked through it, and it was like oil-based. Yeah.
It's home-style minced chicken. And to give context, so every now and then, a couple of us go to this place. It's in Mississauga. So for downtown people, it's a pilgrimage. Mm. Yes. This is the best Chinese place in all of GTA. Sponsor us. Put your name on our shirts. We don't care. And in preparation and excitement, I decided to go and get takeout on Wednesday. But what happened was I got so much and I was so lazy that I ended up eating homestyle minced chicken and fried rice, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for 3 days. Wow. And then gorged on it last night.
Yeah. Rache was with us yesterday. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is not today.
Where is he today?
It's Canada Day, so it's a long weekend, family time, celebrating.
Rache actually takes holidays off from the pod.
He does. Yeah. He does.
Alex, you just came back from a 5-month trip in Italy.
Yes.
Yeah,
I look like a pizza.
Yes.
At this point.
How does that feel?
Round. Mm. Yeah. No, it was good. It was good. I could do with some variety in my diet at this point. Italian food is wonderful, but it's all very similar. Mm. But Italians are lovely, very helpful. I mean, I'm white, so that helped.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do you go? Like, just
all over the place.
Name drop some cities.
Rome.
Mm.
Fiorentina.
Nice. Yeah.
Firenze. It's got four names. Bought the socks.
Oh, yeah?
I bought the Fiorentina socks.
Nice.
Yeah, we saw that. You took a picture standing on a bed.
Yeah.
I don't know why you were on the bed. It's lighting?
I can't remember either.
So you're just so much closer to being a full kit Fiorentina wanker.
Yes. I'm a quarter kit wanker. But I was also too cheap to buy the shirt, so there was that.
Tell us about the atmosphere. What was it like during the Euros? Were they feeling it? Was it Azzurri fever? Like, what was that?
Because they were doing quite well while you were there.
They did a lot better than expected, and it was, we saw a couple of Italy games at bars, and frankly, so two of them. The first game we saw was Italy, Republic of Ireland, and Italy lost, and that was really subdued.
Right.
It was just
they were already through by that point.
They were already through, and they played really badly, and mostly it was just kind of old men like looking around
in disbelief,
chain smoking. Like, they didn't really care too much. But then the next game we saw was Italy against Spain, and that was obviously massive. And there were two, so there was a wedding going on very close to the bar that we were watching.
Did you crash it?
No, but the people from the wedding crashed the bar.
Well, that's the thing.
No one was inside.
I was
going to
say, a wedding that no one attended.
Yes. So there was two guys in particular that kept running out of the wedding to stand at the bar and watch. It was like outdoor patio. Yeah. They're there in their suits. And one of them, and this will be ingrained in my memory throughout, because Jaccarini had a really great game.
Mm-hmm. Great tournament,
All I can hear in my head is,
Bravo, Jacqueline. Bravissimo.
And then every time, they were just absolute.
I think it's more disbelief than trust in Jacqueline, because he just came out of nowhere and had a really good tournament.
Yeah.
Anyways, so let's take these quarterfinals one at a time here. We start with Poland, Portugal. Not the only draw, 1-1. Game went to penalties. And Portugal scraping through, as they did all tournament.
I mean, let's just say it's a good thing we start. Like, this was the first one, because if it was the last one, I would have been dead.
Yeah.
Like, it was a bit of a boring game.
Well, all Portugal games have been. I mean,
except for the Hungary one, which was entertaining because of lack of quality than anything else.
Sure. I mean, you take how Portugal have gotten to this point, and they've come third in a group that has Iceland and Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
They've scraped past Croatia. Some would say unfairly. Their goal was quite sweaty as well, and then they beat Poland on penalties.
Yeah,
they've led the whole tournament for 19 minutes only.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't won a game in 90 minutes. It's a bit of, it's weird how they're here at this point.
It is weird that they're here. It feels wrong that they're here in many ways. But I mean, did we really expect Portugal, who haven't produced a striker? We talk about this every time. God knows how many years, and they're a very, very young team, actually. Yeah. When you take out Ronaldo and Nani, and Charisma. Obviously Charisma, who...
Yeah. Who doesn't start.
Oh, and, sorry, centre-back, Carvalho.
Carvalho, he needs to be playing in a wheelchair. He takes it up. But the core of their team, Andre Gomez, Renato Sanchez, sure, Joao Mario, there's a young group of people there, and I'm not sure... This team won the under-21 Euros or something like that. Mm. So they're growing, but we can't expect much of this team.
Did they win it by winning all penalty shootouts?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they must.
Sure, maybe.
But the thing is, though, Renato Sanchez only really started to get his chance 2 games ago. He didn't play in, he didn't start in the group stages, but every time he came on, his impact was clear to see. So he started the last 2 games, man of the match in both, scoring the equalizer against Poland. He's only 18, also stepping up for a penalty. I think Bayern Munich have made a great signing. Having him and Coleman both in their squad is fantastic.
Yeah, that's next level. What I will say is that Renato Sanchez reminds me a lot of Anderson. Not just because he's got dreadlocks, but the style of play, he's very dynamic, he shoots.
He's also quite...
His passing is good, he squats.
He's very strong.
Yes,
and let's not forget, Anderson was the European golden boy.
Yeah.
Mm. So, if you're saying it reminds you, we have to be very careful here.
I mean, from everything we know, his attitude is beyond reproach, so I'm not too concerned. Just saying, There's room to get carried away here.
Can Renato Sanchez breathe at high altitude though? Because that is what will separate him from Anderson.
To Ecuador and go see what he can do.
So the game started with Lewandowski finally producing. I mean, he's been quite unlucky / just not playing very well. Scoring in the second minute. Great team goal. I can never say this guy's name, but Grosicki?
Hello?
He assisted the goal.
The one that always makes you think you've heard Rositsky.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I thought he was injured.
And he doesn't play for Poland.
And he doesn't look like Rositsky.
It was a really good team goal. Ended with Lewandowski, great striker's finish, which is what he should be doing more often of. And then it looked like, okay, Poland scoring the first goal. Portugal haven't scored a lot. This is going to be, Poland's game moving forward. But then Renato Sanchez again stepped up. Great goal, Nani assist. Nani has been good.
Yes.
Quietly good. A lot of goals, a lot of assists. I don't know.
He's playing in a very different type of role because he's, in essence, actually, they're playing as their striker.
Yeah. They switched him and Ronaldo as a center forward.
Yeah. So I'm very impressed with Nani.
Which I was quite impressed that, actually, because we were talking before the tournament, will they just play Ronaldo at center forward because they have no strikers? And that's kind of what they've done.
They certainly ended up that way in this game. Ronaldo was just kind of loping around up front, just being pissed off with everyone for not being perfect.
And completely miss-kicking balls.
So many, the ball comes... I know it's a hard technique, but it's Ronaldo.
Mm.
But he's done, three of those.
And it's on his left side.
Yeah.
I noticed that. Obviously, we know he's strong on his right, but he's very much two-footed. So for him to be missing those... And I think if he scored the one in the 86th minute, it would have been 2-1, I think. And that probably would have been that. But we saw that the game was drab after that. No one did anything.
I mean, it was horrible.
I think they both wanted penalties at the point. And a lot of the games that end up except maybe Portugal-Croatia, but most of the games, they just kind of are happy to go to penalties. We saw it we'll talk about Italy-Germany. Same thing. They're like, okay, 90 minutes are over. No one's going to take a risk and lose it.
Well,
now,
don't forget, Poland took penalties to get to this
against
point
Switzerland,
in the Switzerland game where Switzerland probably, at least for the last 60 minutes of the game were the better team and put Poland up against it. So these are two teams that really didn't do much of this whole tournament. And
to be fair, when you've got Fabianski on that form as well, you have a chance, because Fabianski has had a fantastic tournament. He's played really well. He saved them against Switzerland. Switzerland, like you said, those pressure moments, they should have scored at least one more goal. Even this game, Fabianski was great.
He was. And to your point about teams kind of settling for penalties or looking as though they have settled for penalties when it comes to, you know, extra time, I think it's really stupid. Not because penalties are a lottery, because they're not. If you practice, you should be better at them, although... Mats Hummels said that Germany practiced penalties.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But if you're going to win a game, the best chance to do it is in extra time when the other team's completely... I mean, everyone is exhausted, yes.
Right.
But if you can put in that bit more effort or make the substitutions...
Made the right subs, yeah.
...a bit of difference, it won't take much at that point.
But that's why we... I think we all agree that a rule change should be you're allowed an extra sub when you hit extra time.
Which they did in the Copa Centenario.
Exactly, which they did in the Copa. The idea is that you are planning for your subs. Three subs in 90 minutes. You should get one. And, you know, I'm fine with maybe saying only at the start. So 90 minutes are over, you make your sub now.
Yes.
Because none of this, like, the 119th minute we'll talk about Zaza coming on.
Yeah.
Like, none of that stuff. But make a sub when the 90th ends and just, that's
well,
it.
Well, that also protects you from making subs specifically for penalties.
For penalties.
Right?
True, true. LVG's career just went down, down the drain again. Yeah. A credit, though, to Ronaldo, something, you know, which I don't do a lot. He took the first penalty, which we were joking before even the penalty started, that will he go fourth and fifth, to, you know, because... I was telling someone that I was quite impressed that he took the first penalty, and my friend said, well, you can't rip off your shirt and celebrate on the first penalty. So that's the dilemma Ronaldo has. But he took the first one.
I mean,
and
if anyone could.
If anyone could. But credit to him. Your best player should take your first penalty, set the tone, and just kind of calm everyone down.
And there were a lot of people, I know you were saying, oh, if he scores this, the Ronaldo people.
Definitely.
And guess what? I did see one where they were making it that Ronaldo scored and the Messi missed.
Yeah.
It was funny. But one thing about Ronaldo that I saw that it was interesting was in the last game against Croatia, which we all know they didn't deserve anything out of, he didn't celebrate at the end.
No.
Right? And people were like, oh, what did he do? He's not celebrating with the team. But it's because he went over to Luka Modric and was comforting Luka Modric.
Yeah.
He was crying. I thought, this is a nice side of him that we don't ever really
see. I think Ronaldo's also, you see, he's under a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even during these penalties, he was kind of standing alone from his teammates. He was too nervous to stand in that lineup. He was kind of looking between, like, Pepe and...
He
like,
wasn't looking at them.
That's the thing. Like, he was... It comes off as a bit like, oh, it's me, I'm on my own. But he's also, I think he puts a lot of pressure on himself that even when they all ran up to like the keeper or whatever they did after they won the penalty, he stayed behind and did that thing where he just falls to the ground.
Yep.
He puts a lot of pressure on himself and it makes you look slightly like an asshole sometimes. But I think it's not at this case.
There are a lot of players that live every minute of everything. And it's a bit, in Nigeria we call it you're being extra. You know, it's like... Every single second of every moment, you're actually in it. And which is why he's angry all the time. And which is why he's, like, frustrated. And if you see what he misses, he's yelling profusely at himself.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what, bro?
He's not, it's okay. He's not
it's
as
okay.
good at it as Giroud, though.
Giroud is the most beautiful at it. You just can't get more beautiful than that.
A series of pictures of his face as he is the anguish.
Yeah. So yeah, Blaszczykowski missing the penalty for Poland, unfortunate for him, because he's been one of their better players.
He's
obviously
had a great tournament.
Yeah. So that's that. Portugal into the semi-finals.
Boom.
Yep, and they will be playing. And they will be playing Wales, who beat Belgium 3-1.
Yeah.
This was one of the best games of the tournament.
Oh, so good.
I enjoyed this game a lot.
It was so good.
It was. Belgium started really strong. Obviously coming off that 4-0 defeat, 4-0 beating of Hungary, Hazard having maybe one of the best individual performances in the tournament.
I think his best performance for 3 years like in football, period.
Yeah. Yep. So Belgium started really strong. They looked good. They finally dropped Fellaini a few games back. Everything started to look okay. Nainggolan opening the scoring with a bullet.
Absolute cracker. That was like... NASA sponsored.
I know you enjoyed
absolute rocket. It was so good.
Yeah.
By the way, on Nainggolan. So you know how was it Bettner? No, not Bettner. It was what's your goalkeeper's name? The one that
Chesney.
Yes. Who got fined for smoking or something? Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So Nainggolan's a chain smoker.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
Jesus.
And they asked Vilmots about like this is unprofessional. What do you mean? And he goes, if I don't let him smoke, He's going to go crazy.
He's going to kill someone. He's already this angry. Imagine he's off cigarettes and
that's
nicotine.
Really funny. That's, I mean, true. If you grow up in Indonesia and then you move to Italy, you've just got no chance.
Seriously.
Like, yeah. Everyone's.
I mean, his lungs are already crap from Jakarta, you know, from the smog there.
But
so.
To be fair, like, he's one of the most dynamic box-to-box midfielders in the world.
Yeah, you let him.
It's the cigarette he took
medical,
before the game.
Like, absolute miracle.
No, for sure. Then Wales started to get back into it. Wales got here by beating Northern Ireland 1-0 with their own goal. So not the most convincing, but they obviously were the deserved winners. And then they started to really get into it. Ramsey, Allen started to control the midfield. Joe Allen is playing like it's 4 years ago. Yeah, like it's once.
And let me tell you, I've been going around Italy, and there are pictures and statues of Jesus everywhere. Yeah. And I kept thinking I was looking at Joe Allen. He looks exactly the same.
Yeah, he looks like Pirlo, he looks like Jesus.
Yeah.
Looks like a lot of people.
He looked like crap at Liverpool, and he's looking really, really good for Wales. And I think they're all looking really, really good. And I don't mean that from a hair point of view,
oh, right.
Aaron Ramsey, yeah, or Gareth Bale, which is ridiculously disgusting, the way his hair is. I hate
it's
it
horrible.
So much.
But yeah, I mean, all three of them have really weird hair,
yep.
But they've all played really well. And, you know, Ramsey and Allen really stepped up this game. Allen playing just the metronome, if you want. I can't believe I'm saying this.
Sure.
The quarterback.
The quarterback. And Ramsey had two assists in this game. Just, he doesn't stop running either. The only shame is he did pick up a yellow, which we'll get to the stupid rule at the end. We'll talk about it in full because I need to vent.
Mm-hmm.
But he had two assists this game. Ashley Williams, another one who just, we talked about him in the past, about can he make that step up to the top four. Arsenal were linked with him a lot. Arsenal fans were kind of divided whether he's good enough, and he has these moments where he shows he is, and this tournament so far is one of those.
Well, let's ask the question of Ashley Williams. When you watch Ashley Williams play for Swansea, does he ever look crap?
No.
I don't think he ever looks bad. Maybe it's sometimes you just don't think he looks, you know, like a savior of the world at Swansea all the time, but he never actually lets them down. I never grasp that idea. And I think of, if you want to use Arsenal, for example, Gabriel, a decent player, but
yeah,
he
yeah.
has a tendency to let you down at times. Could Ashley Williams have stepped into that particular role? I think he probably could have. At most
possibly.
Teams, honestly.
I think the thing when it comes to trying to analyze defenders that play in teams like this is that, and the same is true of like Robert Huth or Wes
Morgan
or a number of defenders that, for example, have been linked to Arsenal in the past. And they do really well for a kind of lower mid-table team in the Premier League, and everyone says they should play for a top four team. Scott Dan?
Yeah, Scott Dan.
Has he done well anyway?
Yeah. But the difference is that when you play for a team like Arsenal, you spend, 65% of the game standing on the halfway line doing nothing, and then your job is to kind of marshal it from there and chase behind you when the ball goes over the top. Is a very different game from when you're playing for a team that isn't expected to win.
A team that's under the cosh all the time. You're playing basically in your 18-yard line. I mean, can you imagine Morgan or Huth trying to defend at the halfway line?
I think the similarity in what you're talking about is, if you look at Italy, for example, every time that they play against a team, they're actually always defending.
Yeah.
So it's easier to say, but even though we agree they're world-class, Bonucci, Chiellini, all of them are great defenders, but it's because you actually see them defending all the time. And that's why a lot of people put a lot of, focus on Ashley Williams now, because he's actually always defending and he's doing it very well. So there's a balance. Like, when you're defending all the time, you're doing it well, you're a good defender, but what about when you're not having the ball? Then, it's very interesting.
Also, when you make a mistake,
yeah,
but you've done so well because you've had so much action to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That mistake doesn't feel as costly. But if you've only, like an Arsenal, you're playing Crystal Palace, and you've only had three chances to clear a ball, and one of them you've messed up, then clearly you've had a horrendous game, right?
And we have similar conversations about goalkeepers, right?
Yeah.
Like, the ones that have 15, 20 shots to save in a game
will
look and feel as though they've been brilliant.
Yeah.
And maybe they have, but the ones that have very little to do every week.
I mean,
less opportunity.
We talked about this, Bernie. We were talking about Neuer, and we're like, well, but he doesn't get to make a lot of saves. But it's about that concentration, where when he has to make that one save in a game, he makes it. De Gea, the past few seasons, why has his stock risen so much? It's because United's defense was bad, and he had to step up. He was in the spotlight so much.
And it just highlights how really terrible Joe Hart is, because Joe Hart can't save anything.
That's the thing.
I have been saying this for so long.
Joe Hart is so bad.
England had five shots against them on target. He's conceded four of them.
Yeah.
He's made no saves this tournament.
Yeah.
Like, literally no saves.
And let's not forget, In fact, we can talk about this from a Wales context because the Gareth Bale free kick, he should have saved it.
Yep.
And the second Iceland goal, he should have saved that too.
Yep.
They were horrendous mistakes by a goalkeeper who I really hope Pep Guardiola ships out.
Yes.
But let's not use this to get away from Wales.
I mean, England is overshadowing Wales again. but yes, like we said, Ramsey Allen, Ashley Williams, obviously
Bale. Ross and Connor's goal, by the way.
Oh. I mean,
wow.
You were talking about players who step out of their abilities to kind of shine through. This was, I mean, what's his name? The pundit. Savage. Robbie Savage. He's a savage. He was talking about how if this was a Messi goal, we'd be talking about it forever. Okay, relax. But yes, I see what he means in that turn that took out three defenders.
One of them was Fellaini, so it doesn't count.
And you could just see them, like, kind of dispersed from around him, and I actually got off my seat before he kicked it in. I got up and I was yelling.
Because you could see.
Yes. I was yelling at the screen like, oh my God, this did not just happen.
It was a beautiful Cruyff turn.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite thing I saw on Twitter this last week was the happiest parents in the world are Brian Robson and Kanu. That was
brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it was brilliant. It was a lovely piece of skill. And what I find really endearing is that afterwards, Robson Kanu basically said, yeah, I've just turned and I've hit it. And it's just like, way to sell it, man.
Yeah, no.
But the thing is, three defenders bought it. All it would have taken was one of them to realise what the hell's going on. And then,
the funny thing is, I remember watching this game live and the cross came in. And as it was coming towards Robson Kanu, there was a guy at the far post completely free. And I yelled at the screen.
I think it was Bale.
I yelled at the screen as the cross came in, leave it.
Yes.
He didn't leave it. So he touched it. He took his first touch. Mm-hmm. Then after his first touch, I yelled at him to lay it off to the other guy who was in front of him at the top of the box. And I was yelling, lay it off to him. And he just dallied on it. And I got mad. And mad and mad. And then he does that. And he fooled us all. There was like eight of us in the room. And we were all fooled. All of us.
That's spectacular. And now their reward is Portugal.
Yeah, which is a great reward, to be honest, I'll take it.
You know what? We'd say that. But the fact is, it's going to be a very compact game because Wales don't know how to use the ball.
Yes.
Like, their possession stats are always lower than a team. Portugal use the ball and then don't know what to do with it.
And
Ramsey's
a big loss for Wales. I mean, he's been their best player this tournament, I'd say.
So it's going to be the knuckleball free kick derby.
Yeah. But you know who comes in for Ramsey is, I think, Andy King.
Andy King, yeah.
And we saw towards the end of last season that is just fine.
Yeah. Before we move on, Sam Vokes, I have to say that was a perfect header.
What a header.
It was from post. You know, sometimes they say it doesn't go in because he's too far forward. He's too far past the front post. But he got that header across against Courtois, who has had a good tournament.
And he's huge.
He's huge.
He's
huge.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing about that header is you don't put too much power on it so it goes over the bar.
Mm. But
it's just perfect amount of touch that he put on that thing. It was unbelievable.
It's good Roche isn't here because he would start talking about his header at this point.
Which he did yesterday. For the whole Chinese restaurant to hear about his header that was actually disallowed.
2014. All right. Moving on, we've got Germany-Italy. This was the big one this round. And as expected, it was cagey, it was tactical. And the tactic started pre-game where Love had actually put out a 3-5-2 formation to match Italy's 3-5-2. That was a really good move, I thought, because we saw Italy this tournament and in general. I mean, they've beaten Germany in 2006 and 2012 every time they've met them for the past whatever. But the 3-5-2 really does beat the 4-4-2 or the 4-3-3 or whatever team because of the extra numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And Love did really well to match that. He brought in Havertz, played Havertz, Hummels and Boateng in the back, and it worked for them. They controlled the game quite well, Germany.
Well, it makes sense if you're dealing with, because not many teams play with two central strikers, but Italy do. And it makes sense to have a back three there because, you know, you've got the one man extra and then your fullbacks can still get forward.
That's what I love about the 3-5-2. People think of it as a defensive formation, but it's one of the very few that allows you to play two center forwards.
It's entirely dependent on your wing backs. And it's entirely dependent on the amount of energy your wing backs can exert in a game because, as we've seen with Manchester United, if your 3-5-2 isn't used with the right players, it's a catastrophe.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a 4-2-3-1 which can balance itself out depending on the personnel. This is a very specific formation for specific players, and Conte, especially, is a manager that seems to be able to get that out of those guys.
He did it with Juve.
And then Yogi Love showed he can do a very similar thing.
He did it with Juve, he's doing it with Italy now, and it will be interesting to see if he does it with Chelsea. But you're right, the wing back, but when you have Florenzi, you're just in heaven. Like he's fantastic.
He's perfect. His energy is fantastic. That block, delivery is brilliant.
That block was unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if the ball was going in necessarily,
but he doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that, and the flexibility he showed to clear it like that, unbelievable.
People also focusing on the block, but there was one where he plucked the ball out from like 60 yards in the air, and he completely brought it down right in front of Buffon. First touch, that's he just the thing, killed it.
Your heart flooded.
Oh, that's it. That's what I watched this game for, man. First touches. Anyways, so the game started, like we said, KG 3-5-2 on both sides. Defense is on top. I mean, Hummels and Boateng, a beast of a pairing. They're going to be, I mean, for Bayern next season. What
it's
a buy
silly.
By
it's not
Bayern.
Fair, really.
It's not fair.
I feel like there should be some regulatory body that says, nah, sorry.
Yeah.
Like the mergers and acquisitions. Yeah. Like, no, you can't merge Smith Klein, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But Boateng is I don't want to say underrated. He's just under the radar. When people think center backs, a lot of names come up before Boateng.
It's because he's had a journeyman kind of weird career, especially when he went to Man City. And English fans don't really care about anything Man City before 2012.
Yeah.
And he looked rubbish. And then he came to Bayern Munich and he was, So we're still remembering him from that point of view. And I remember saying this game, for me even, this was a point of view where I said to myself, you know what? In my eyes, he's arrived. Like, yeah. I was watching this game, I was like, wow, he's actually
this whole tournament,
really good.
He's been fantastic. And on the other side, you had Chiellini and Bonucci, who are, as well, just walls.
It doesn't
just
get better than that.
It doesn't, like, and then you have behind them, you have Neuer and Buffon. Like, this was one of the best two defenses in a game. No wonder it was cagey, tactical, not a lot of goals. Ozil broke the deadlock. It was a really good, well-played, like, team goal. It was one of the first good flow attacks that Germany did have, and they scored from a great late run into the box. And then right after that, Ozil delivered a really good ball to Gomez, who really messed it up. He should have buried that 2-0.
Yeah,
that ball,
or at least laid it off if
something.
He couldn't. You know,
Chiellini almost put it into his own goal, but Buffon, what a save.
Yeah. And on Germany, there's one thing I've noticed about this team is that they've had some great performances. I think it was 4-0 the last game or something like that.
3-0 against Slovakia.
But the thing with Germany is, altogether, they've still not put it together. They've still not been, like, Ozil has fluttered in and out. And in fact, yesterday was the only game where he's actually been good.
Yeah.
Draxler has been good.
Cruz was horrendous
Cruz
yesterday.
Cruz was apparently clear of tournament, and then he were crappy. Like, they haven't put it all together. And that's what's scary about Germany is that what are you going to see?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should be seeing the champions of this tournament. You really should. At this point, with Italy out and Spain out, I mean, maybe France. Other than that, Germany should win this thing.
Yeah. I mean, France-Germany feels like it should be the final at this point. But is it a semi-final?
Yeah, it's a semi-final.
Yeah, well, that's really disappointing.
I mean, not yet. But if Iceland have anything to say.
Are you really going to do that to Iceland? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Come on, man. Come on.
Yes.
I mean, your home nation should know about this, man.
I was supporting Iceland. One thing, sorry, about just before we move on from Germany. I didn't see this game. Any Yogi Löw antics?
Not as much. Not as much, but he's getting quite annoyed by the questions. They asked him again pre-game.
He has no right to be annoyed by the questions.
I just don't like his V-neck. Like, I mean, I wear V-necks, but he just makes it look bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he didn't have any kind of...
Okay.
Yeah,
no gif-able moments.
No. Okay. But back to Boateng, he gave away the penalty, which obviously created... Poor guy, he gets memed every few months.
Speaking of gif-able moments.
Yeah, gif-able moments is Boateng against Messi in the Champions League. And then now this, where I understand defenders do this a lot, where they push in with their kind of bodies into the defender to kind of give him a nudge, but hands out saying, ref, I'm not using my hands.
Yeah.
And then his hands were way too high up. Hit his arm, obviously given a penalty.
There was no debate on that.
Bonucci scoring a really, really good penalty against Neuer, actually.
I was quite
impressed. And then we got to the funniest/worst penalty shootout possibly in Euro history.
I did wonder whether they were taking the piss. It was just a big joke or something.
So before we get to that, at the 119th minute, Zaza got subbed on.
Yes.
Conte thinks he's LVG.
He pulled a reverse Tim Krul substitution.
Yeah. But there are some stats, though. Germany haven't lost a penalty shootout in 40 years, which was 6 attempts at this point.
Only 6 in 40 years?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. They just win.
It's because they win. Yeah.
Yeah. And all the EPL players missed.
All of them?
All of them.
Darmian,
Schweinsteiger, Ozil,
Arsenal,
and Pella.
Amazing. Pella didn't just miss.
Oh, Pella didn't take a penalty.
Pella was on the wrong pitch.
The thing is, you could actually have a competition of which was the worst, and you could make a debate. I mean, Zaza's run-up was unbelievable.
I've never seen anything like that.
And then the way he just curved it wide, it's like, was it free kick practice? From a distance?
Best comment I've seen on Twitter that wins the whole Zaza debate is this guy was like, hey, you gotta give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt. He just came on. He was doing his warm up and taking the penalty all at the same time. Okay, so
the thing with that stuttering run up though is that when you've seen it before, stop dropping pens.
Sorry,
is when you've seen that kind of thing before, like they do the stutter a little bit to start,
twice,
to like get some momentum, and then they go into a normal stride. Whereas he kept it going right until the moment they kicked the ball. And
it was just like a Russian dance.
The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
And who else? What, Pella? Well,
so Muller went over the bar. Bastian.
No, Muller was not even close. Like, Muller was like
sorry, right, over, yeah.
No, was Muller's wasn't over. Schweinsteiger was way over into the. His was the opposite of Zaza. It went the other side.
Right.
And then Muller just like passed.
Oh, it was very tame. You're right. Yeah. Right. Ozil hit the post. It was actually the best of the missed penalties.
That's two for him. True. Yeah, that's two. Tournament. That's,
he's missed four of his last five.
So Muller's off penalty duty. Yeah. Ozil's off penalty duty. Yeah. who's next?
But, I mean, this is the funny thing. This obviously went to like a lot of penalties. Something like 9 or 10. The first five takers of each side, I think, missed like three between them. And then everyone else wasn't supposed to take a penalty. Yeah. Did a fantastic job. Boateng curling it into the side netting, no problem. Kimmich, like, just.
It was funny for me to see Manuel Neuer sent. Like, sprawling the other side. He's committed to every dive, whether he's going the wrong way or not. Yeah.
But that's why he conceded, like, three times down the center. Like, three times plays in a row, just put it down the center.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I like that because it annoys me when you see a goalkeeper. They're guessing, clearly, but they've guessed aside, but they do it so half-heartedly. Like, they just kind of
just
fall
in case.
Over to the right. It's just like, well, even if he goes that way, you're not going to get it.
Bonucci missed his penalty, though, unlike the one during the game.
It
he
wasn't horrible.
But it was a great save.
But it was a good, very, very good save. It wasn't as good as his first one, but it wasn't horrible.
Yep. I feel bad for Buffon. He was really sad. Yeah. He was so sad. I mean, a lot of people are leaving their national teams now, but I think he said he's staying on until 2018, but he's a legend. He's one of those guys that just... I love him. Like, he's everything about football. Like, he's brilliant.
He's everything you've known.
Like
basically,
he's just...
Right?
It's
and
true.
The sad thing about this was... Barzagli, I think, in an interview, he was crying and he said, now no one's going to remember what we've done.
Yes.
And it's so true. It reminds me of Holland year 2008.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to... We're not going to remember 20 years down the road that this great Italian team... Yeah. Who overperformed in the quarterfinals.
I think
no
this shows you. This shows you that they feel like underdogs. They feel like no one has given them the benefit of the doubt that they can do anything. And that was the feeling they took to this tournament. And this is why they've played so well and so strong.
So I take that point. On the one hand, they were underrated and undervalued before going in. And they've done better than people said they would. That said, Barzagli, like, you've performed better than you were expected to at a relatively low quality European championships.
Right.
Like, you haven't come in and like saved the Second World War. Like,
sure.
Except in their defense, I'll say this. They completely manhandled Spain, which I know.
I know.
We've seen it happen and everything. But these were the reigning champions.
Yeah.
And honestly, man for man, they are a better team. This was the worst Italian team people were saying for 50 years, man for man. But then they took Germany all the way to penalties.
Yeah.
And you know what? At that point, if Italy went through, you could say they deserved it.
They didn't lose to the European champions. They didn't lose in the regular time to the world champions.
And they beat Belgium, who, again, man for man, are a better team than them. So
this is Verratti dropping out early. Marchisio dropping out
Pirlo's
early.
Pirlo's retired.
Pirlo's gone. Like, they didn't take Giovinco. You know, things like that.
That's the most important thing you just said.
No Barini. Either.
No Barini.
But here's the thing. If Barzagli gets to cry about this, then I want to see Joel Campbell crying at the end of last World Cup when Costa Rica get knocked out by Holland on penalties.
I'm sure he did.
On TV. Then.
Or what's their name when Suarez did the handball?
Ghana.
Ghana.
Everyone cried.
Yeah.
I mean, Sammy Kufour was still banging on his kitchen floor. Like, absolutely.
So Germany are going to play the winners of France and Iceland, which is happening in 15 minutes. So we're hoping to wrap this up so we can get to
that. Speeding up a bit, that's why.
So obviously we know the Iceland story, blah, blah, blah. 10% of the population in the stadium. Okay, we get it. Now France. Like, it's been done. It's been done.
It has.
France.
Mm-hmm.
They have. This is a big banana skin. This could be the worst upset in their history. It's the host nation. They're playing the smallest.
They might just vote to leave the EU if they actually lose this game.
Yeah, Frexit.
I like that.
But I don't know. I mean, they didn't look convincing against Ireland. They haven't, to be fair, they haven't looked convincing all tournament.
No.
As a whole, okay? They didn't score against Ireland till the 60th minute.
Mm-hmm.
Iceland are known to be good defensively. So this could be, they could start getting frustrated as the game goes on.
It's going to be, I think they're going to have to be patient again. I don't expect them to roll over Iceland.
Yeah.
They're going to have to pick their moments. They're going to, I think don't panic is a thing that France have to do. Just stay calm and then you will get your goal. We know that Griezmann has not actually been good at all, but Griezmann has gotten his goals when the supply has been there.
Right.
His heading ability is fantastic for really a little good guy.
Yes.
I'm sorry, you're just about to see some Giroud madness this game.
Oh, yeah.
He's about to blow your mind off. Like, he's gonna, like, eat three goals.
For our listeners, this is 100% Mohamed's sarcasm.
When he
says blow your mind, he means give you beautiful images of him holding his beautiful hair
after misses
and crying beautiful tears after missing.
He'll be Iceland's new volcano.
Yeah, you know, people who are injured for a long time should try Giroud tears as healing process. I feel like it might work.
By the way, on the topic
Kangaroo.
Of...
Kangaroo, yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
On the topic of beauty, Gunnarsson, I don't know. They're all sun something.
That's probably one of them.
The one with the flowing blonde locks looks like Thor, right? Who scored against Portugal?
Goldilocks. Yeah.
He's been offered. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's a joke or not. I think by Next or one of the British retailers,
right.
A modeling contract.
Oh wow!
After the win, because apparently he's the most beautiful man here. And I think him and Giroud would be a beautiful battle.
Yes.
That would be excellent.
So Next would have Beckham and Gunnarsson or whatever his name is.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, that should be the halftime show. Next to each other. And there you go. But what I was saying about France is that Deschamps has really struggled to find a system that works consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So what tends to happen with France is they start a game, they don't do well enough, he makes a couple changes, they win the game, and then he starts the next game how he ended the previous one.
And then
that doesn't work, then he goes back to the first system, and he just keeps rotating it until he wins the game.
This is basically how we manage our UTC summer
team.
At halftime, you go, did that end well, or should we go back to the start? That's it. But yeah, I mean, France should really go through. We'll get to see how that happens in the next 10 minutes or so.
But hey, Iceland... Again, we don't want to gloss over this. Wales have been a wonderful underdog story, but Iceland have been like
next level.
Like we're talking about under the underdog.
here's a question for you: would you take an Iceland Wales final for the story, for the narrative, or would you want a big
what,
you know, traditional big nation?
But there's
in there.
No big. Oh, one big nation.
Well, France, there's Germany.
Okay, I would take Iceland Wales for the history of it, but from a purely personal standpoint, I would take Portugal and France.
Okay.
No, I want Portugal nowhere near. Nowhere
I know you don't.
Ronaldo,
I'm not gonna lie. I want that Ballon d'Or. If he wins it, I win it. That's how I feel.
You know what, Alex? That is a very good question. I'm tired of seeing Germany do well, I think.
Oh, everyone.
It would be nice for Ozil as well. It's the Ronaldo aspect for me, for Ozil. But I feel like France. I would like to see France win it.
Yeah,
But Germany have only won the World Cup. And it's not like they won the World Cup and then back to the Euros.
But they've been dominating. Like, they've been dominating
recently.
Also, the
thing is, like, Germany... Even when they're not winning, they're close. They're there about. Like, they've had a couple bad years in the early 2000s. But other than that, like, they've been up there.
France needs something, I think.
I mean, I'd have an England... Wait. Nice. Now we can move on.
Okay.
Before we move on from the Euros, can we talk really quickly about this ridiculous yellow card rule? When you get two yellows in a row, you miss the next game. I absolutely hate it. I want to see a semifinal where the best players from those teams get to represent them.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, but... I am allowed a yellow card in 90 minutes. It's within my rights in the rules of football. That
I demand my
exactly,
yellow card.
I actually feel like it is the player's right to get a yellow in 90 minutes. He is allowed to do that. He is not allowed to get two, but he's allowed to get one. Why am I being punished for two yellows 90 minutes apart, 3 days apart? How does that relate? I hate it.
It's not that I don't disagree with you. The thing is, it's within his rights, yes, to get yellow, but it's also within his rights not to get two yellow. Like, whatever the rule is, you have to play within
but
that rule.
But why? Why is that rule
because
there?
Because they're trying to do this whole
to
discipline
limit.
Thing.
Nice.
That's the thing. They don't want you crazy tackling
why?
People all the time because they want the game to flow.
But am I not allowed to get a yellow?
Sure. I don't disagree with you on that sense. I'm just saying the logic behind it is the same way you get five yellow cards in the Premier League or something like that, then you get a ban.
But the good is way worse. The bad is way more than the good.
What you should do is you should mitigate it and say you cannot, because it only becomes an issue when it comes to semifinals and finals. Yeah. No one cares if you miss a quarterfinal. You never hear people say, oh, he missed a quarterfinal, the guy's in tears. No. I think you should, if you want to maintain the rule, do that, but wipe it out
they once do in you the get final. To the semifinal. They do in the final,
yeah,
but
because
it's not
that's
enough.
A worst Roy Keane-esque tragedy, but semifinals is a big deal too, if you're, especially if you're like a Wales and you're Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah.
You know how this changes though? The sponsors get on the phone and they're like, listen, we need the players that we sponsor to make us some money. Yeah. So I leave them on
like
the pitch.
I've paid Ronaldo a gazillion bucks and now he's missing the semis. Are you insane?
If Ronaldo or Messi got the second yellow, the second it happened, that rule would change.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. And I get upset when, I mean, the Italy-Germany game had 12 players between them on yellows. That's way too much.
But then again, Italy play that way. Like, this doesn't happen. What was it? It was a, I can't remember what team it was. Was it Iceland against England or one of them where they were like, oh, he got a yellow card, but he's not in danger of it. But the England players were. Because this is how some teams play. So,
look, I think if you're allowed to get a yellow within 90 minutes, then I shouldn't be worried 4 days later about a yellow I got. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I can't mitigate that. Like, a yellow within the game is my right.
I just
right.
think it's within the rules, so just play within it. Like, you know what it is.
But it's an arbitrary, but this bit is arbitrary. They've taken it over from a league format in which it makes sense.
Exactly.
Put it into a cup
and also, to be fair, it feels like I'm not really in control. Like, are you asking me to not get a yellow over 180 minutes? That feels like a lot to ask.
Mon, look, you can't do it. Yeah. I watch you play. It's either you're going to kick a guy or you're going to yell at the referee. Like, people like Alexander over here, you know, they can stay calm.
But also, if you think about it, is the rule not discriminatory towards players in defensive positions?
Yeah.
Because, like, a striker might get a stray yellow card, but he's much less likely to get, you know...
He's an idiot most times, yes. That striker kicks the ball away, you deserve that you're an idiot.
Yeah,
but
as
a defender...
But the thing is...
Like, you're just doing your job and you might get booked for it.
It could be equal. If referees, for example, gave yellow cards every time someone dove from an attacking standpoint, which they really should do, but they don't. So there are a lot of problems with that, and I agree with you guys overall.
All right, well, this has really went over the time. Let's move on to
penalties.
Penalties, yes.
Of the week. Of the week. All right, so I have the pleasure of introducing Moomoo of the Week this week with one of my favorite characters, Emmanuel Shea Adebayor.
Yeah.
Unbelievable disgrace.
Where's he from?
Well, he's from Togo, but...
Is he?
Originally Nigeria, but I don't want to harp on that.
Okay.
Like I usually do.
Yes.
Because he's a disgrace. And this is the latest in his disgraceful antics. Actually, it's just funny. So... All of a sudden, and there's no context to this. You just see this picture of Adebayor, who's been released by Crystal Palace, has nothing else to do. He has resorted to selling pygmies. This is now his human trafficking business because he was caught with measuring tape, just measuring some miniature person, or maybe it was a child. I don't know.
No, it was
a miniature person.
Is a midget like a bad thing to say?
It was a small person. Yeah. Like he was actually like measuring him, probably to put him in a box and send him somewhere. I don't know. Where.
This African midget guy was lying on the floor, Adebayor on top of him with one of those old school tape measures from toe to head, going, "How tall are you, bro?" Like that was unbelievable. These are the things that happen.
Meanwhile, on Snapchat, Adebayor was measuring a midget.
Like, was it research or was this actual commercial?
He was like, "How many of these equals one of me?" Like. Unbelievable.
Well done, well done.
Equally stupid were Manchester City. So Richard Wright has been on Manchester City's bench for like 4 years, I think.
As a keeper.
A keeper of what? I don't know.
Yeah.
Secrets.
Of funds.
Wages.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've paid him 4.1 million over 4 years to literally do nothing.
Yep.
He hasn't played a game.
Not.
But his record of clean sheets is 100%.
100%.
I mean, those are statistics you cannot argue with.
You can't. Facts are facts.
Yeah, his job in the laundry room was sensational.
I mean, he's better than Joe Hart. It's clear. He's not letting a goal.
That's not
at all.
The bar is not too high.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could have got anyone. And they had Pontillimon.
Yeah.
They had, what's his name? The bald Spanish bloke.
Caballero.
Caballero, yeah.
The thing is, Pontillimon actually had some
talent,
aspirations to actually go and play. This guy was happy to sit there.
I mean, like, he's been around since God knows when.
Yeah.
They had other reserve keepers. What were they paying him for?
And City have a part two to this.
Ooh, yeah.
And they just unveiled Nolito, 29-year-old Spanish
winger.
Just wide forward. He's just an attacker. Whatever.
Pep will turn him into defensive mid.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a wing back at some point. So he, during his unveiling, they're trying to take a photo and use the backdrop of the stadium, the empty stadium, which is normal. And that's contextual because he actually looked in awe. Like, he was impressed a little bit. And he said, do they fill it? And his translator didn't say anything for a good 30 seconds. And Lito's like, why? Like, looking like, what's wrong?
Did I stutter, bro?
I think he was just confused by the concept of Manchester City filling the Etihad Stadium.
Yeah. Yeah.
And United fans jumped on this to say, see, you don't fill up your stadium.
He should have just said yes.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the truth is. Just yes and move on.
You're like, Premier League matches?
Yeah. Yeah. Champions League?
Yeah. Is that it for Momo?
Yeah, I think that's it. That's our three.
Who wins?
It's got to be
measuring a midget. Like,
yeah. Edinburgh wins for a lot of weeks.
That's the first thing he's won in a very long time.
True. Except for the hearts and minds of Togolese.
Right.
And Alan Pardew.
All right, so before we move on to our quick fire round about all the transfers that have happened, it feels like ages ago now, but Chile are Copa champions. Back to back after like 7 years or whatever. It was crazy. I mean, they have the golden generation right now, and they're making the best use of it.
Yes. Sanchez, unlike many countries.
Yes, Sanchez and what's his name up top as well?
Vargas.
They're breaking all the goal scoring records for Chile. They're doing great.
And all their ankles.
Yeah, all their ankles.
And then Vidal in the middle. Yep. Medel.
You've got a few good players. Also Aranguiz and like they have good stuff. So congratulations to them and all that. Messi was obviously the highlight after that. He missed this penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, just the weight of the world felt like it was on his shoulders, and he emotionally just instinctively said, you know, a few things to the media where he's like, you know what, this is too much for me now. I've lost 4 finals with Argentina. I feel like I've done everything I can and I can't anymore, and this is probably the end of the road for me. It isn't official. A lot of people think he'll obviously come back, and the Argentinian people have been, you know, trying their best to say, the president.
What a selfish person for crying on camera.
Yeah. Yeah, crying on camera. How dare you? I mean, Aguero's... There's a lot of people saying... I mean, we've never seen Messi this emotional. Usually he just takes it, moves on. Aguero's like in a changing room. I've never seen him this emotional. I think it's similar to Ronaldo. Puts a lot of pressure on themselves that they feel just responsible. They feel like, I can't do anymore. The Argentinian FA is in shambles right now. Maradona comments. A lot of things don't help.
There are a couple of things here. First and foremost... Which South American FA is not in shambles at this point? Brazil is in even deeper shambles than them. Sure. All of them are. This is one of the best teams in the world. If you look at pound for pound, this is one of the best teams in the world. They should not have lost back-to-back Copas and the World Cup. There's no excuse for that. So I get that there's a shambles, but if they're trying to use that as the basis of this, they're
completely
wrong.
But to be fair, 23 years, they haven't gotten into a final. They haven't won anything in 23 years either. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it was a record of being great, and then Messi came along and they started not winning things.
Yeah. Well,
if anything, they're the closest they've ever been.
I think it was in the 78 they won?
Yeah.
That was basically fixed anyway, so...
This is a bit of my problem, is that they are there, and there are little things that they need to do,
like,
and seize the moment. They're not seizing the moment, and that's no one's fault but themselves. But then again, the thing with Messi saying this retirement thing that bugs me a little bit is, I get he was emotional, and that's fine. Yeah. No one has any problem with that, is that if he didn't mean it, right, then it's like been, what, a week, 2 weeks almost?
I think he might have.
Like,
maybe
he did. I'm actually starting to think maybe he did mean it, because now everyone is, like, the politicians are coming out, children are writing him letters, all this stuff is going on, and if you didn't mean it, he would have come out a couple days later and say, hey, you know what, I was emotional, I'm good now.
There are a lot of similarities with Brexit. did they mean it? I'm not sure that they did.
Can we revote?
Yeah.
No, I think he does have, he feels a lot of pressure to perform for Argentina, and I think it's taken a toll. It's finally hit him, and a lot of people are like, well, who wants to go play a World Cup in Russia anyways?
Yeah.
No one wants to do that. My only beef with the situation is, I know Mane doesn't like when players retire from Spanish football, and I don't really have that big of
before,
a problem when it's more like you're trying to preserve a club career because of physical things. I don't mind that. But in this particular case, I think Messi has no business, like, retiring, so to say. Because now, if he really cares about this country, right, he's the best player in this country.
Mm.
If they're going to win, the best chance to win anything is with him.
See, that's
so
the problem.
So don't do that.
That's the problem. That's the narrative that we have. But when you look at the Argentinian media narrative, similar to the English, like the media is a big deal. You look at the Argentinian narrative, there's a lot of Messi is this, Messi's not doing enough, Messi's this, he doesn't sing the national anthem, Messi. So it's not this whole, oh, we love Messi, why is he leaving? It's a lot of like, leave, no one cares. Maradona said it before, if you don't win the Copa, don't return home. Like, there's a lot of like negative aspects from Argentina where we feel it's all positive. Like, why would he even want to leave? But I think there's more to it.
I mean, they still think that Maradona is the best player they've ever had. And I mean, that's the opinion, but maybe he feels that. I don't know. But yeah. I think he needs to come back out and stop this.
I'm looking forward to Dybala finally getting his chance.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people are looking forward to Dybala. So selfish. All right, so let's do our quick fire round of transfers here. I've just got them in a random list. Okay, we'll go through them. Let me know what you feel.
Right.
Arsenal today have kind of announced the signing of Takuma Asano.
Is it a sign of things to Kuma?
Wow. It's a sign of things to Kuma.
Is it? Are you now going to be sponsored by Toyota and everyone's going to drive Toyota Tacomas?
Yeah, no, but we don't park the bus.
You know what's interesting? The only interesting thing about this, because we don't know anything about the player. Great, could be terrible, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Is that there was a year, I think, was it 2011 or something? When was it that Arsenal signed Rio Miyuchi and Patrick Vieira joined Manchester City?
Yeah, like 12 or something.
Yeah, and then yesterday we signed a Japanese player and Arteta joins Manchester City.
Yeah,
maybe these things are linked. Maybe if you didn't sign a Japanese player, Arteta would actually be on your coaching staff.
The only positive Arsenal fans are taking from this is that apparently, so we got the scout that found Kante and Mahrez and whatever from Leicester. We hired him, Arsenal, allegedly. So they're saying, well, if this is the guy that picked him, maybe we're in for a good player.
But then there was a rumor that the people said you actually got the wrong guy.
Yes. What do you mean? That's racist. That is extremely racist. I will not stand for it on this pod. Anyway, so that's that. God help Arsenal fans if he doesn't turn out to be good, because that's the only striker that
we're signing. He will be on loan somewhere next season.
It's not. Yeah, whatever. Sell some shirts. Okay. United are doing some good business in the transfer market. They've signed Eric Bailly, Mkhitaryan, and Ibrahim
Baye.
Oh, yeah? Is that what we're doing now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's 1L, though, isn't it?
Two.
No, it's two.
Oh, I see. I know the rule. I just thought it was spelled with 1L. That's a spelling error, not a pronunciation
that's
error.
That's how you save yourself.
Yeah. Eric Bailly. Fine. Bay. I mean, he could be Bay for United.
That joke.
Mkhitaryan and Ibrahimovic.
That's so not bad, is it?
That's not bad at all. And Jose Mourinho is also a signing. So United practically selling their soul.
Practically.
That happened ages ago, man.
Well, I mean, Giggs leaving now just is really the last cog.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we've said it all, living legends, leaving the club, going to manage some crappy team and fail, and then we're going to be like, oh, Fergie, people can't manage.
Whatever. Right,
so
right,
this is
right.
just his trend.
His record away from home should be really good, though.
But where is he going to go? Like,
rumors are Bolton and Nottingham Forest.
Dear God.
Well, I mean, you got to start somewhere.
No, I agree. He should start down there, but he's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean...
I don't know.
If you have a Steve Bruce managerial career, you're like, it's not that bad.
Yeah. You know
how Ronald Koeman has his brother as his assistant manager? Maybe Giggs could try that.
Yeah.
He can assist him in many different ways.
Before we move on with this, Dortmund had a great... I mean, Dortmund are extremely unhappy with Mkhitaryan. He pushed the move, like, hardcore. They're extremely unhappy. But... they had a thing where they released a statement, and in the statement they said Mkhitaryan is now moving to Manchester United, who finished fifth in the Premier League, and we would like to wish him luck in the Europa League next season.
That was very well done.
Speaking of United, Mata apparently could be moving to Everton. Well, we know he's not going to play under Mourinho.
Yeah.
Question is it Everton? Talks are he's agreed personal terms, and now there's the fee to go.
If it's Everton, then they're selling him a project, which... people are saying includes Axel Witsel, keeping Lukaku.
I mean, the new Persian dude.
There's a lot of money there, apparently. Yeah. But then that makes me wonder what's going to happen next year in the Premier League, because we all know the Crystal Palace are trying to throw money around. Everton now trying to throw money around. Leicester tried to buy Troy Deeney for 30 million.
So. I mean, Crystal Palace bid for Batshuayi, who didn't go there, and he ended up at Chelsea for 33 million pounds. That's done.
The funniest thing about this is that Palace actually bid more than Chelsea.
Yeah,
but Batshuayi was like, nah.
No, yeah, sorry, for sure.
He's like, I'm sorry, I'm not here for chaos.
Yeah, instead, Palace have now bid 25 million for Benteke.
Yeah,
which Liverpool rejected.
Which Liverpool won 30. I'm sorry. this is a striker that has failed miserably, and you're selling him for 30 million.
I'm not sure he did, though.
Come on. No, listen.
He got 10 goals in whatever appearances, and then he just got unceremoniously dropped. Never played for, like, the second half of the season.
30 million for Benteke now?
$30 million for Benteke was ridiculous in the first place, and they just want... It's understandable for Liverpool to want to try and get their money back. And Crystal Palace are clearly stupid enough to do it.
They have no strikers.
I just think you take that 25 million and go. I'm not really sure.
But you know they will get the 30. That's the thing. You know they'll get
it. The thing is, that whenever these clubs... I get it. They're penny-pinching. I'm like, you're making so much money. Maybe if they act like this all the time, they all go broke. I get it. But... It's 25 million for Benteke. Take that money.
But then people who don't know Bernie, his solution to any problem is throw money at her.
This is libel.
In Europe, it was literally like, what's the problem, man?
Just get a cab.
Guys, my girlfriend listens to this podcast. Can we not put ideas in her head, please?
I hope she benefits from this method of yours.
Here's the thing. While we're on Palace, they also signed Andros Townsend. 13 million.
Didn't know that.
13 million, Andros Townsend. Which is funny only because they've got like five other wingers already. Like, how many can you possibly
play? And they sent
play?
Dwight Guild in the other direction for 10 million.
Which is stupid because he actually does score
but
goals.
But none of them are Townsend. Come on, mate.
True.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, England were hoping, wishing he would have gone.
There was like three games where he was their savior. It's remember true. When he scored like two goals in three games? And it was like, that's it. We found the missing card.
It was hilarious how many times I heard people say, if only Andros Townsend was playing on the wing instead of Sterling. I was like,
it's hysterical. Right. But they also signed Mandanda.
Yes, which Alex is so happy about.
That's actually a really good signing. I how they've convinced him to do it, I don't know. Yeah. But Mandanda and Lloris know each other from France, right? Obviously, good mates.
In London.
They can talk to each other about Andros Townsend.
That's the common bond they have, yeah. So that's that for Crystal Palace. It's so much Crystal Palace talk in the transfer segment. Neymar is now the best paid player on the planet at 480,000 euros a week.
Which will not last longer than a year.
Post tax,
though. Signs.
Yeah, sure. Ronaldo will sign after the Euros. Get sign, but post tax, 480,000.
In response to this, I will say there is currently an investigation going on that is, I think, near to being finished. That is investigating, I think it's coming out of Belgium, I forget the kind of regulatory commission that is doing this, but they're investigating the help that the Spanish state has given over the past years to Spanish clubs, mostly Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Thank God.
Yeah. Because there's been so many dodgy dealings with the banks, with the training grounds and the sales and what have you. And again, like, where are Barcelona... How are they paying for this?
Madrid and Barcelona get loans. They just get loans
from
banks.
They don't have money.
That's it.
No, a couple years ago, they actually had to take a loan from UniCredit to actually pay the players' wages.
They've sold like half of their upcoming players to the B team to get the contracts off their thing just to pay Neymar. Like,
and
I get it that Neymar... Oh, okay, so they've also signed Umtiti, which is, as Alex said in the intro, crazy for Barca to sign a young, good center back.
30 million.
Yeah.
Where they get that money from, we have no idea.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, man. But anyways, they make it happen.
Alves wages, maybe? Mascherano?
Mascherano's staying, isn't he?
I don't know.
By the way,
Mascherano is staying.
Dani Alves also owes back taxes, too.
Of course he does.
So that's Alves, Messi, Mascherano.
Neymar.
There's another one.
Neymar. Neymar's dad is just chilling on boats.
They don't see some taxes in La Masia, do they?
No. Nolito to City, we talked about, so that's that. Similar to Neymar, Hulk moved to China for what a journey. He follows money around. So Zenit, first off, and then now they paid 41 million. Zenit is 41 million, whatever it is, euros more rich. Yes,
you know
today
the
than yesterday.
Rubles? They would have put him on a bike and ridden him to China. They literally would have done that after seeing that.
Yeah, if the bike wouldn't have broken.
He's making £320,000 a week post tax.
Wow.
Like, obviously you'd go. Like, guys, no one cares about Hulk and what he does in the next 3 years. No one literally cares if he goes to Chelsea and wins the Champions League or whatever. He's making millions.
The question is, how much of the weekly salary does he have to spend on oxygen tanks?
Yeah.
He can give one to Anderson. They're both
missing.
That's true.
PSG have made some good signings. Ben Arfa has moved to PSG.
Yeah.
And I can never say his name.
Kroziak.
That's, sounds like Krakosia from
that
movie.
That is definitely Unai Emery starting to pillage Sevilla.
It's a great signing. Although they did have Benji Stambouli, so I'm not sure why they needed him.
Yeah, true. So, I mean, I'm excited to see Ben Arfa in the Champions League.
Yeah, that'd be excellent.
Yeah.
You know, Zlatan's gone, they need some kind of crazy, nutcase, supremely talented forward.
No, correct. Last but not least, on the transfers, we've got Sadio Mane to Liverpool. Here's a stat for you. Liverpool have signed every single Southampton player that has scored against them at Anfield since Southampton came up or whatever.
You guys know the definition of insanity?
Yeah, doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results.
Exactly what this is. Man,
I genuinely thought Klopp was different. I thought that it would end now, but it hasn't. It's unbelievable. Like, Sadio Mane is a decent enough player, but he's not going to take you anywhere.
No.
There was a tweet I read where, like, this Liverpool fan actually said, you know what? This is different from the transfer committee because Klopp actually wanted him. I was like, I mean, it's very possible that Brendan Rodgers wanted Lovren,
Markovic,
and Lallana, and what? There is something in the water.
There is.
In that Liverpool Merseyside, you know, the Mersey River?
Yeah.
Something wrong there.
You know what? Coleman should really finish above Liverpool.
He should.
If this is the only signings they make, he really should make a few signings and finish above.
If he brings in Witzel and Mata, they already have a better team than Liverpool.
The only argument to that is Joe Allen rinsed Witzel.
It's true. Imagine Witzel goes permanently and he's like, No, get away from me.
Okay, last two things we're going to talk about because it's been more than an hour. I think we've never done an hour long pod.
This is history, boys.
This is groundbreaking. This is congratulations.
We should just have a 2 minutes of silence just so it goes past
8,
an hour.
Yeah.
7, 6,
yeah. 5, 4. Yeah, we've got 5 seconds to go. Okay, so...
Happy New Year.
The two last things are coaches. Milan have signed Montella. And when you told me that, I didn't know. I said, where was he? Because the last I've heard of him was Roma. But then you said he moved to Fiorentina.
He was at Fiorentina, did all right. And then he was on gardening leave or whatever.
Right.
Now Milan.
Right. Wasn't there a Montella player too?
That was him.
That was him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, nice. Because I remember...
He won the league.
Yeah, left footed.
The one time they won the league.
Yeah.
With Battistuta and...
he did the wings celebration.
I'm sorry. He's a good manager, but I thought Pellegrini was available.
Where is Pellegrini?
Moyes was available.
Yeah, but... Why would either of those want to go to AC Milan?
Why would they want Moyes?
Pep has taken Arteta aboard his coaching staff now. That's official. As Alex said, the bald and the magnificent. I mean, I don't know. Arteta, Bernie was asking, why wouldn't he stay with us in Wenger? Because I think we did offer him something. One, I think it's two reasons. My reasoning was that I think the scope of responsibility, I think Pep is giving him a bit more. Mm-hmm. Just because we already have a setup, right? Mm-hmm. Pep is new. He's bringing his team. The other thing is, which Alex brought up, is that Arteta's already seen Arsene Wenger for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to learn much more staying there as an assistant coach. It's better to kind of get more of a range.
It's also when you've seen someone perform insanity, which we just discovered is doing the same thing over and over again, and Arsene Wenger, maybe you think he's a bit crazy, he's doing rubbish, I'm gonna go with some guy that's actually...
I mean, you want to learn from Pep too, to be fair. Pep is more of a modern manager.
Yeah, Wenger's an example of what you shouldn't do.
I mean, if Arteta's going to be a manager in 3-4 years, you want to learn from a current modern manager.
Yeah. Absolutely. And let's not forget that also Arteta might harbour ambitions of one day managing New York City FC.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is obviously get into the city centre.
I'm sorry, Patrick Vieira's already there. He is going to manage Melbourne City.
Sorry. Yeah.
Also, my only worry is that he learns from Pep, and Pep makes these crazy money signings, then he somehow becomes Arsenal manager when he can't do that anymore. And it's just Arteta.
Hey, Wenger doesn't want to do it.
Mm.
Arteta might want to do it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I mean, he looks to me like someone who absolutely does not want to do it.
No. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I think we've covered it all. We're 20 minutes into the France game. We'll go see that.
All right.
And then next week, we'll pod right after the final.
Anyone know La Marseille?
No.
Allez les Bleus. Vive la France.
I don't have a third thing to say.
C'est fini.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.